Okay, so we're going to start from the top of Daf Tzad Yomid Aleph from the third line by the two dots. Okay, so the Mishnah told us, right, we said, Klipia gozen u klipi rimonim stesupua kedil tzboa beged katan. We were discussing various types of things that were used for the purposes of dyeing, things like nutshells and pomegranate shells and these different kinds of plants, safflower and madder, that were used for dyeing. So the Mishnah said that the amount of these items that one must carry on Shabbos to be chayav is enough to dye a small garment. So the Gemara asks, Urimini, hamotzi samanim shiruyin kedil tzboa bohen dugma li'ira. How can our Mishnah say that the shear for carrying these items is enough to dye the little, the small item, the small headdress that a woman puts on top of her head? This Brisa seems to say, and we actually mentioned this a little bit earlier back on Daf Ayin Tes, that the shear that makes you chaya for carrying out herbs and spices and dyes and things like that, that you're soaking in water in order to dye, is actually the shear that you would make what's called a dugma li'ira. Dugma li'ira means you would make this small, like a swatch of wool that you would use basically on a loom, right? The loom was a thing they used to use to weave with. So that was a much smaller shear, a much smaller amount than the amount of dye that you would need to dye the little thing that the woman put on top of her head. So which shear is correct? So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Avua, Lefi She'en Adam Toreach Lisho Samemanim Litzboa Bahen Dugma Le'ir. This is an answer that we already spoke a lot about earlier in the Masechta, back in the 8th Perek, where the Gemara said that people typically are not going to go to the trouble of soaking dyes in water just to make a swatch of wool to put on the loom. It's considered to be so small and relatively insignificant that you wouldn't go out of your way to make that lichadchila on Shabbos. It's just too much of a hassle. If you already had it, if you already had the plant soaked in water, that's one thing. But to soak in water lichadchila, it's going to have to be a higher barometer. The shear is going to have to be larger enough to actually make it worth your while to want to soak the dyes in the water. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, to list different things that were used as various forms of like detergent, of like laundry detergent. So for example, the first thing we said was mei raglayim. They used to use urine as a form of detergent. So the Gemara says, Tana mei raglayim ad ben mem yom. So urine apparently only had this potency, this ability to act as a form of a detergent within the first 40 days. After the first 40 days, it lost that potency and was therefore no longer able to be used for that purpose. Okay, then the Mishnah said neser. So Tana, neser alexandris, philo neser ant patrin. So again, the Gemara is defining which types of neser and which types of detergents you can use or were considered to be effective. So only the neser that came from Alexandria was considered to be effective, but not the one that came from this other place on Patron that wasn't considered as effective. Okay. Then we said Boris. So what exactly is Boris? So Amar Rav Yehuda Zechol. So Rav Yehuda says that Boris is sand. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? V'asan yaha Boris v'hachol. But the Brisa seems to list Boris and sand as two distinct entities. So the Gemara says, you're right, Elamai Boris, Kivrisa. Boris must refer to sulfur. So they used to use sulfur as a form of a laundry detergent. So the Gemara says, but hang on a second, Mesve, Hosifu alein hachelbitzin v'haliunin v'haboris v'ha'ihel, v'isalka daitach Kivrisa, Kivrisa mi'isa b'shvias, v'hasanya zehaklal, kol sheyesh lo ikar yesh lo shvias, v'she'en lo ikar ein lo shvias. The Gemara cites a Mishnah in Maseches Shvias that lists various types of plants that one is not permitted to use during the Shemitah year. Again, these are all different kinds of herbs and plants and whatever it was that people would plant. But and one of the things that's mentioned is Boris and Ihel, right? Boris is the thing that we're trying to figure out what it means. So the Gemara says, if you're going to tell me that Boris means sulfur, that's problematic because we have a Brisa in Maseches Shvias that tells us that only those types of plants that are Yeshlo Iker, that have a root, that are growing from the ground, are subject to the Isurim associated with Shemitah. But if you have something which does not grow from the ground, which does not have its root in the ground, like sulfur, for example, then it would not be subject to the Isurim of Shemitah. So the question is, if Boris is sulfur, sulfur doesn't grow from the ground, how could the Mishnah and Shvias tell us that there's a problem of using Boris during Shemitah? So the Gemara says, you're right, Ela, my Boris, Ahala, must be that Boris is this Ahala, this aloe that we mentioned. So the Gemara says, but what do you mean, V'hasanya v'ha Boris v'ahala? Didn't we just list Boris and Ahala separately on the list in the Mishnah? The Gemara says, you're right, Trey Gav. Avnei Ahala, there are two types of aloe. One of the types of aloe of Ahala was known as Boris. So Boris is a species of aloe. That's the Gemara's Maskana. Okay. Then the next thing we said was Kimolia. That was like this simolian earth, again, that was used for detergent. Amar Rav Yehuda, Shlof Dotes. It was, again, Rashi understands the Shlof Dotes to mean, like that was the name of the thing that they would use. But other Mefarshim say that Shlof Dotes means that, like, you would stick it in and pull it out of the earth. That was a kind of the kind of dirt that they used to use as a form of detergent. Okay, and then the last detergent we mentioned was ashlag, which I think the official English translation of ashlag is potash. So Amr Shmuel shel tinu l'chol nechusayam v'amrli shunana shemei. So Shmuel said that he asked all the guys who go down to the sea, and they told me that the name of this ashlag is called shunana u'mishtakach benukva de marganisa. It was found in pearls inside of gems. And they used to extract it using these metal or iron tongs. They would extract them from the pearls, from the gems, to get out this ashlag, this potash, whatever it was. Okay. The Mishnah now continues. Pilpeles kol shehu, the itron kol shehu, mine besam umine matachos kol shehin. So again, we're back to discussing how much of different items one must carry on Shabbos to be chayav. So when it comes to carrying pepper, again, not the vegetable, but the spice. So you're chayav when you carry any amount. For itron, for tar, you're chayav for carrying any amount. For types, for various spices or metals, you're chayav for carrying any amount. The Mishnah then continues. May avne hamizbeach umeafara mizbeach mekak svarim umekak mitbechoseim kolshu shematznian osan legones. And the Gemara is going to discuss this a little bit more. But basically, let's say a person is carrying the stones of the mizbeach, or you're carrying the earth from around the mizbeach, or let's say you're carrying the mekak svarim umekak mitbechoseim. That means that there were these different insects, these different parasites that used to eat away at different svarim, at different books, Sifrei Torah and Tanakh, and books of Tanakh and things like that, or the coverings for those things. So the Mishnah says that if I let's say, for example, I have a Sefer Torah that started to be chewed up by rats or whatever, by bugs or whatever it was. So now the Torah is now the Torah has to be buried, right? Because it's been destroyed. So the Mishnah says any amount of that Torah, that scroll that I carry on Shabbos, is going to make me chayav because it's considered to be chashuv, because I have to bury. There's a mitzvah to bury the Sefer Torah or the covering or whatever it was that was destroyed by these animals. So therefore, any amount that you carry out is automatically going to make you chayav. Okay, and then the Mishnah ends off. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af hamotzi meshamshe avodah zara kolshehu, shenemar velo yidbak v'yadcha me'uma min acherim. Rabbi Yehuda adds that if a person were to carry out meshamshe avodah zara, which is something we spoke a lot about, if you remember at the beginning of this parak, remember we spoke about things that are accessories to idols, right? Things like the pedestal for an idol, things of that nature. Rabbi Yehuda says any amount of an accessory of an idol that one carries on Shabbos will make you chayav. The reason being because the Torah says in Parshas Ikev that a person is not allowed to have any association with anything to do with idol worship, including things that are not the idol per se, but even things that are accessories to the idols. And what that practically means is that a person has to burn them, right? We know that the halacha is that a person has to burn Avodah Zarah and anything else associated with Avodah Zarah. So because there's a mitzvah to do sreifa, to burn the accessories to the idols, carrying any amount of that accessory by definition makes it chashev. It makes it considered to be something which would therefore make you chayev on Shabbos. Okay, so the Gemara now goes...
Getting back to the pepper.
Yes.
Tell me one grain of pepper.
Look, Billy. Look at the first words in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to ask your question. Pilpelas kol shehu lemaychazi. What are you going to do with one grain of pepper? So the Gemara says l'reyach hapeh. Apparently, they used to use pepper as a some kind of a breath mint. I didn't know that pepper made your breath smell better, but apparently that's what the Gemara assumes. They used to use pepper as a way to make their breath smell better. Okay, then we said itron kolshu for tar, any amount for tar. So l'maychazia litzil chaz.
Yeah. So it is saying one grain.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. Yes, correct. One grain of pepper apparently was somehow, I don't know, it was some kind of like a Tic Tac, a breath mint. I don't know, that's what they used to use it as, I think, yeah. Okay, and then what was tar used for? L'maychazia, l'tzilchasa, it was used to cure some sort of a headache that people had. I don't know exactly how that worked, but okay. Then the Mishnah said, mine b'samim kol shehin, we said, yerchaya for carrying any amount of spices. Tanu rabbanan hamotzi re'ach ra kol shehu, shemen tov kol shehu, argaman kol shehu, uvesulas haveret acha. So the Gemara says that if a person person carries out something which has a foul odor, but they're carrying out for medicinal purposes, they're chai for any amount. If you carry out a sweet smelling, a good smelling oil, again for medicinal purposes, you're chai for any amount. If you carry out argaman, like this royal purple colors, so then again you're going to be chai for carrying any amount. Rashi says, according to, at least in one shot in Rashi, that maybe the argaman also had some kind of a smell that was also medicinal by nature, so you would be chai for any amount. And then this thing called a besulas havered, which was like a virgin rose, a rose that was first plucked from the ground. So again, you would be chaya for carrying this rose, this flower that had even just one leaf on it. Okay, then the Gemara says, "Mini matachos kol shein." The Mishnah said again that if you carry any amount of metal, you're going to be chayev. So the question, of course, is, "Lamai chazu?" What are you going to do with a tiny amount of metal? Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, shekein roi lasos mimena darvan katan. You can make it into a small nail. So you take a small piece of metal and make it into a nail. So therefore, it does have some kind of a function. Okay, says the Gemara, "Tanu Rabbanan ha Omer harei alai barzel." Let's say a person pledges to give to give metal to the Beis Hamikdash. So the question is, how much metal do you now have to give? Or how much iron do you have to give? Achirim omrim, lo yivchus me'ama al ama. You cannot give less than an ama by an ama of the iron. So the question is, l'aychaz, what are you going to do with only an ama by an ama of iron? Rav Yosef, l'chalya orev. Rav Yosef says, you can use it to make what's called a kalya orev. The Gemara in Menachos tells us that a kalya orev is a raven catcher. And in the Beis Hamikdash, they used to have on the top of they had these spikes on the top of the Beis Hamikdash that were meant to scare away ravens and birds and whatever it was from landing on top of the Beis Hamikdash. So apparently these raven catchers were the size of an amma by an amma. So that's why that's the minimum amount that you needed to have if you pledged to give metal or iron, whatever it was, to the Beis Hamikdash. The truth is, just by the way, just parenthetically, Tosfos on that Gemara in Menachos on Daf Kuf Zayin quotes a shita of the Aruch of one of the early Rishonim, who actually claims that a kalya ore was actually more like a scarecrow. They used to put up scarecrows to scare away the birds. So I'm not exactly sure how that shot would fit into the Gemara, because I don't really know why a scarecrow would have to be made out of metal specifically.
Oh, Rabbi,
yeah,
go ahead. Something you see today, it's called Nixolite. You see on buildings by the roof, why do you think it would be these spikes, nails coming out?
Right.
So those tiles on the roof of the Beis Hamikdash had little nails coming out of metals.
Right, spikes. Correct.
Bird would rest on there and poop on the...
Right, no, correct. That's correct according to the simple pshat of kalya orev. My only question was is that according to the Aruch, right? In other words, according to the pshat that thinks that it's a scarecrow. So my question was, then what's the point of making? In other words, why does a scarecrow dafka have to be made out of metal? You can make a scarecrow out of hay, out of whatever, and it probably has the same effect on the birds, most likely. I'm not sure. Okay, so.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So then the Gemara says, "V'ika da'amrei achirim omer lo yivchos mikalya orei v'chama amar Rav Yosef amalam." Fine. So in the second version, the Gemara just says you can't give less metal or iron than amount that's needed for the raven catcher, which again is an amma by an amma. Okay. Then the Gemara says, "What if a person pledges to give nechoshes? What if a person pledges to give copper to the Beis Hamikdash?" So then the Gemara says, "Lo yivchos mima'a kesef." You cannot give less than the equivalent of a ma'a of silver. So however much copper is the equivalent of a ma'a of silver is the minimum amount of copper that you must give. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, lo yivchus mitzinora ketana shel nechoshes. You cannot give less than a tzinora ketana, than a small thimble, a small fork of copper. So lamai chaz, again, what is it used for? Amar Abaye, shemechatetin ba'es apsilos, shemekanchen haneros. They used to use it basically to clean out and the wicks in the menorah and to prepare the wicks. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, mekak svarim mekak mitpachas. If a person carries out...
Specific pledge to give an amount less than these required.
Yeah, so that would be different. That would be different. That would be different. Meaning, if you pledge to give whatever a half an amma's worth, let's say, of iron, that's fine. That's different. But meaning here, we're saying you just made a pledge. Stam. You said harei olai barzel. Right. Exactly. Okay, so then the Mishnah said, "Mekak svarim u'mekak mitpachas." We said if a person carries out, Sifrei Torah, books of Tanakh, or coverings of Sifrei Torah that were eaten up by animals, by these bugs, whatever it was, so then you're chaya for carrying any amount on Shabbos. The reason being because these things require geniza; you have to bury them. So therefore, any amount is considered to be chashuv by definition. So Amar Rav Yehuda, "Mekak de Sifrei, Tachach de Shirai, Ve'ila de Inve, Ufa de Seine, Ve'he de Rimone, Kulu Sakai." makantas. These were all different types of insects, bugs, whatever it was, that used to eat at different things. So the makak were the bugs that used to eat the Sifrei Torah. The tachach were the ones that used to eat the silk. The ila used to eat grapes, the pa would eat the figs, and the ha would eat the pomegranates. And Rabbi Yehuda said, all of these bugs, if you swallow any of these, it's very dangerous. It's dangerous to swallow one of these. And the Gemara has a story about this. Ahu Talmida, to have a Yosef Kamid de Rabbi Yochanan. There was a student who was sitting in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Have a ka'achil te'en, he was eating figs. Amar le Rebbe, kodzin yishbat te'enim, he says to Rabbi Yochanan, are there thorns in the figs? Amar le katli paladein, and Rabbi Yochanan exclaimed that the pod, remember the pod were the bugs that eat the figs, must have killed this guy, this student, because the Gemara said that it's dangerous to swallow one of these bugs, so he felt something sharp in his throat. It was probably that insect that he had swallowed. Okay. The Mishnah now continues. Hamotzi kupas arochlin, a person carries out go ahead. Yeah.
Is there any, can we take away something from everything we're learning now that if something doesn't have any chashivas, all right, my grandchild takes an empty bag of M&Ms, he eats the M&Ms, he puts the empty bag in my pocket.
Okay.
Now I'm carrying it on Shabbos. I have no chashivas, to me. Is there a matzah for that?
It's a good question. I think the assumption, the Gemara, even though the Gemara spends, what I think most of us would consider in an ordinary amount of time talking about the specifics of these halachos, but the Gemara does not cover every single thing on the planet because, the Gemara didn't know about the stuff that was going to happen today. So I think Lemaisa, if a person were to walk outside on Shabbos in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim or in a Carmelis without an Eruv, let's say, right, with an empty wrapper or tissues in his pocket, Lemaisa, we're going to say that you're chaya for that. The thing is that these types of items, which have a theoretical barometer of chashivas in the first place, you have to meet that standard in order to be chai. I mean, if I have an item that's just like a piece of garbage, right? So that has no chashivas at all, right? So there's no bar to meet. Any amount that I carry out is going to make me chai by definition, right? But all these items that we've been mentioning for the last, week and a half, all these things are used in certain contexts. And that's why we're trying to figure out how much of these items do I need to carry to be chai. Okay, so based on that theme again, the Mishnah says, "Hamotzi kupas aruchlin, afal pi sheish ba minin harbe, eino chayev elachat asachas." If a person carries out a whole basket full of perfumes and spices and whatever, so even though you have different types, different species, different whatever in the basket, you're still only going to be chayev one karbon because it was basically just one act of chilul Shabbos. Then the Mishnah quotes a machlokas which we actually touched on a little bit earlier back in Daf Ayin Tes. Zeroni gina pachos mikigru keres, Rabbi Yehuda ben Besira Omer Chamisha. This was a machlokas regarding Zeron Egina. How many seeds that were planted in a garden do you need to carry out? According to the Tanakhama, you can even carry less than a grogeris, less than a fig, which usually, as we've already mentioned, most of the time the shear for carrying food on Shabbos is the size of a grogeris, the size of a fig. So according to the Tanakhama, these seeds are less than that shear. According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, the shear is going to be five planted seeds in order to make you chayav. Then the Mishnah continues on the top of Ambe, Zera Kishu and Shnayim, Zera Dilu and Shnayim, Zerapul Hamitzri Shnayim, if I carry out cucumber seeds or seeds for gourds, for pumpkins, or for these Egyptian beans, whatever they are, so the shear again is going to be two seeds, that's going to make me chayav. Then the Mishnah says, Chagav Chai Tohar Kolshu, Mace Kigro Geras. If I carry out a live kosher grasshopper locust, then I'm chayav, even if it's a tiny little locust, a tiny little bug. If it's dead, then I'm only chayav if I carry out at least the size of a grogeres, the size of a fig. Then the Mishnah says tzipores krumen, which is a specific species of locust, which we'll see in the Gemara more about that. Bein chayav, bein mesa kolshu, shematznian osala refua. So these types of locusts, so again, the tzipores krumen, you're chayav whether they're alive or dead when you carry out any amount, because apparently this specific species of locust was typically used for the purposes of refuah. It was used for medicinal purposes. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af hamotzi chag of chai tamei kolshehu, shematznian oso lakatan l'schokbo. Rabbi Yehuda says that even if I carried out a live, non-kosher grasshopper, I would also be chayav even if it was a tiny amount, because, as we'll see more in the Gemara about this, kids used to play with these grasshoppers even when they were alive, so they do have some kind of a function. They do have a purpose. Again, we'll see more about this in the Gemara in a second. So the Gemara first of all asks, Uremini zevel v'chol hadak k'deil lezavel kelach shel kruv divrei Rabbi Akiva v'chachamim omrim k'deil lezavel kresha. So the question again, this is going back on the first case in the Mishnah, about the zerone gina, the seeds that you planted in the garden. How can the Mishnah say that the shear is either less than a grogeros according to the Tanakama or five seeds according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira? This brisa seems to say, and we actually quoted this again earlier back in the Ayin Tes, back in the Pei, where the Gemara said that if I have manure or if I have very thin sand, so there's a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, how much of that manure or sand must I carry to be chayev? So either it's enough to fertilize and plant cabbages or enough to plant leeks. But both of those shiurim, whichever one you think it is, are definitely larger than five seeds or less than a grogeres. So how can our Mishnah say that the shear for carrying zerone gina, the garden seeds, is either five seeds or less than a grogeres, when this brisa seems to indicate that it's actually enough to plant either leeks or cabbages? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Papa, ha dezriya ha delo zriya, lefi she'en adam toreach lahotzi nima achas lezriya. Comes Rav Papa with the same answer he gave in the Gemara earlier, that this brisa that was talking about this larger barometer, this larger shear of the cabbages or the leeks, was talking about seeds that had already been planted. Because a person is not going to go to the trouble of carrying out one single seed to plant. It's just not worth your trouble unless you're going to be planting something significant, right? You're not going to carry out one seed if it hasn't been planted. If it's been planted already, if it's already zerone gina, and it's already going to be part of something which is already planted, so then the assumption is that you're going to be chayav when you carry even one. But if it's something which you have yet to plant, so then you're only going to be chayav if you carry out multiple, either enough to plant leeks or cabbages or whatever it is. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, zera kishuin, again, those are the cucumber seeds, the gourd seeds. Tana rabbanan, hamotzi garin. If a person carries out seeds on Shabbos, so it depends why he's carrying it out. Im linatia shtaim. If you're carrying it to plant, then you have to carry two of them. Im la'achila kim lo pi chazir v'chama melo pi chazir achas. If you're going to do it because you want to eat the seeds, then you have to carry enough to feed a pig, which apparently was one seed. Im la'hasik k'dei levashel beitz akala. If you were carrying the seeds to use as a form of firewood, then it would have to be enough to cook an easily cooked egg. And im l'cheshbon shtayim achirim omim chamesh. And if your goal in carrying out these seeds was for the purposes of counting, why exactly were they using the seeds for counting? So Rashi says that they used to basically use these seeds as like a way to, as like a simon, so as a way to be able to help them count up, coins or whatever it was. So then either the shear is going to be either two seeds or five seeds. That's machlokas in the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, hamotzi shnei nimen miznav hasosu miznav hapara chayav, shematznia nosan linishbin. If a person carries out two hairs from the tail of a horse or of a cow, he is going to be chayav on Shabbos because they used to use these hairs for traps, for trapping animals. Miksha shel chazir achas. If you carry out the stiff hair of a pig, you're going to be chayav when you carry even one single hair because they used to use that apparently for sewing shoes. And then the Gemara says, tsurei dekel shnayim, torei dekel achas. The Gemara distinguishes between the tsurei dekel, which are like the thicker parts of the palm tree, right? The palm fronds, you're chayav when you carry out two, but the thinner parts, the vines of the palm, you're only chayav when you carry out one. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Tziporis Kramim Bein Chaya Bein Mesa Kolshu. Again, this specific type of locust. We said you're Chayav when you carry any amount, whether it's alive or dead. So my Tziporis Kramim Amarav Palya Bire. That was the name of the, that was the official Aramaic scientific name of the locust. So Amar Abaye Umishtakach Bedikla Decha Navara. This type of locust was found in a one vine palm tree. The Avdila Lechuchma. And if you wanted to become smart, you wanted to become wise, you would have to eat or you have to use this locust. In other words, like, what would you do? So, achile lefalga diamina, you would eat the right half of the locust. Falga dismali ramila bigusa denechashi, you would take the left half and put it into a copper tube. Vechasim la beshitin gushpanke, seal it with 60 seals. Vesali la beivra dismal, and hang it by your left hand. Vesimanech, and the way to remember which hand to put it on is a pasuk from Koheles. Leiv chacham limino, veleiv kesilis smolo. The heart of the chacham is on the right, and the heart of the fool is on the left. Vechakim kamadabai, vegamer kamadabai. Talmud Abai, you would become as wise and as learned as you wanted. The only thing is, the Gemara says you have to make sure to eventually eat the other half of the locust, because if you don't, you're going to forget all of your learning. Again, I don't really know exactly how this works or why this works. This is very reminiscent of the Gemaras. We had these Gemaras a little bit earlier, back in the Ayin Zion, about, remember the guy who sees the ant walking by and he puts the ant in the copper tube and he shakes it over his head, right? There are a number of Gemaras like this where they give you all these kind of, I don't know if I would even call this like medical advice. I don't even know what I would call this. This is advice for people who want to become smart. It's like some kind of like an elixir or something like that. So the Gemara says this is what you got to do.
Rabbi, yeah. Just a question on eating locusts in general.
Yes.
Assuming it's a kocher locust, yeah. You know that it is. If you find a dead kocher locust,
this is really more of a chulin topic. Lemaisa, most people, including almost all Sephardim, do not eat locusts today. There are certain groups of Yemenites who have long-standing traditions who will eat certain types of locusts, but there are very, very few people like that today. But this is a big discussion in the postgame in Yoredeya. All the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch discuss this. Technically speaking, there is nothing wrong with eating certain types of locusts for a variety of reasons. For because we lost the Masorah or whatever the reason was, practically we don't eat it today. But locusts, in theory, locusts do not require shechita. Locusts are like fish, so in theory, if you were a person who was eating kosher locusts, you would not have to shech them. They would have to be dead, as we'll see in a second, because if they're alive, that's going to be a separate issue, a bal teshachta, which we'll see in 1 second. But if assuming that they're kosher, assuming that you have a tradition to eat them, then technically yes, you could eat them even without shechita. You don't have to.
You find a dead kosher locust.
You can eat it.
You don't have to see it first alive.
Correct. Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Correct. Exactly. Okay. And then the Mishnah. This is the last part of the paragraph. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rav Hamotzi. What was that? What? I can't hear you.
Salted
first. Yeah, exactly. Salt the locust first. Okay, so Mish said, Rabbi Huda Omer Av Hamotzi. Rabbi Huda said that even if you carry out a non-kosher grasshopper, whether it's alive or dead, you're going to be chayav for any amount, because he said that you can use it as a toy for your kid. So the Tanakama savar, lo, the Tanakama obviously disagrees with that. So the question is, my time, huh? Dilma Achila, the Tanakama apparently was concerned that a person may come to eat the non-kosher grasshopper. So the Gemara says, but then Ihachi Toharnami, if the concern is that you may come to eat it, that concern should apply even to a kosher one. Why? Rav Kahana have a kaim kamei de Rav. Rav Kahana was one time standing in front of Rav. Bahava kama aver shushiva apume. He was passing a live kosher locust in front of his mouth. Amar Lee said to him, Shikli, stop that. Delo lemru mechel ka'achele v'ka'aver mishum bal teshak tu es nafshu seichem. So Rav says to Rav Kahana, stop doing that, because people are going to think that you're violating the Yisra bal teshak tu, that you're not allowed to do something that makes yourself or makes other people disgusted by you. So even though technically speaking it's permissible to eat the kosher locust, but because it's not really so normal or hygienic or whatever to eat the animal when it's alive, so that could be a violation of Baal Teshaktu. So the Gemara says, you're right, Ella Dilma Mayis Va'achale, must be the concern was not that you were going to eat the live locust, but rather that you were going to eat the dead locust. That apparently was the concern. So then the Gemara says, Rabbi Huda Imayis Katan Mismitzafidle. Rabbi Huda says, that's not a concern. If a kid has a pet locust, a pet grasshopper that he plays with, and the grasshopper dies, the kid's not going to eat the grasshopper. The kid feels some kind of an emotional connection to the grasshopper. He's gonna give a eulogy for the grasshopper, the same way that when a kid's dog dies, so he's gonna have a little funeral in the backyard and speak about the dog. It's the same thing. He's gonna speak about the grasshopper. He's not gonna eat the grasshopper. So Rabbi Yehuda says that was never really a legitimate concern. Okay, Hadron Alach Amar Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so starting the next parak again, we're still on the same theme about carrying and storing items and things of that nature. So the Mishnah says, yeah, go ahead.
Wanted to mention one thing,
sure.
Because I'm new to the shear, but I once had a situation where I was carrying a mashu in my pocket.
Okay.
And it's because I wanted to mention a story about Rabbi Lamb.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear.
So when I lived on the west side, Rabbi Lamb davened very often Friday night in the Jewish center. And even though it was a far walk, he used to go there every Friday night even after he got older and lived 20 blocks away. So I had a blank check in my pocket. And the question was I allowed to carry that blank check all through Shabbos, because it wasn't considered anything, because you couldn't use it. And he actually sat me down. He was like, really,
you have no problem with this with only one condition, as long as you write the check out to YU after Shabbos.
Okay, there you go. I mean, I think that question probably touches more on a topic we spoke about earlier, about in terms of carrying the different tax receipts. Remember, we had a whole discussion earlier back on Daf Ayin Tes or Pay, whatever it was, about tax receipts and, you know, how big the letters on the tax receipts have to be. It's probably more related to that. But yeah, that's a very, I guess, Rabbi Lamb story. Okay, very good. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Hamatznia lezera uledugma velerefua vehutzio b'shabes chaya b'cholshu. So a person who is going to, again, put something into storage, which again, storing something is an indication that it has chashivas, right? So if I store something, either for the purposes of planting, for the purposes of a dugma, to make it into some kind of a sample, I want to, let's say I sell seeds in my store, so I want to store something because I want to put it on display, or I have it for medicinal purposes, and I then carry it out after storing it for one of those three reasons, that I'm chayav for carrying for any amount, because again, the fact that I stored it either to plant or for samples or for medicinal purposes indicates that it has a certain measure of chashivas to it, and therefore I'm going to be chayav when I carry any amount. However, a regular person who's carrying, let's say, a seed on Shabbos, for example, would have to carry the proper shear. Again, assuming that the guy didn't initially store it and granted chashivas, he's just carrying it for the first time, then he would have to carry however much the shear of that particular item is, as we spoke a lot about in the previous prakim. And then the Mishnah says, Chazar v'hichniso eno chayv ala kishiuro. If you then bring the item, in other words, out of storage, so let's say I initially stored an item for medicinal reasons, let's say, and then I decided to remove it from storage, so the Mishnah says, then you're going to be back to having the status of a regular person, namely, you're only going to be chayv if you carry out the regular amount, the regular shear, and not this, you know, not even a kol shu. So the Gemara wants to know here, lamalei lemisnei hamatznia lisnei hamotzi lezera v'ledugma v'lerefua chayav kol shu. Why does the Mishnah have to preface, again, this is a question that we kind of touched on a lot in the previous prakim, almost more tangentially, but now the Gemara is really asking it for on the Mishnah. Why does the Mishnah have to start out by saying a person who stores a seed for reason X, Y, or Z is going to be chay when they carry it out the kol shu? Just cut to the chase. Forget about storing the seed. Even when I store the seed, I'm only chayv when I ultimately carry it, right? For example, if I take a seed and I put it into storage for medicinal reasons and I just leave it there and I never touch it, I'm not chayv on Shabbos for that, right? I didn't do anything. I just left it in storage. I'm only chayv when I carry the item from storage and take it outside. Then I'm chayv. So the Gemara says, so then forget about the word hamatznia. Why does the Mishnah use this very misleading word that if I store seeds, I'm chayv? It's not really true, because you're not chayv for storing seeds, you're chayv for carrying seeds that you initially stored. So why does the Mishnah use the word hamatznia? So Amar Abaye hacha b'may askinan kegon shehitznio v'shachach l'mahitznio. Says Abaye, the case in the Mishnah is the following, where I initially stored a seed for whatever purpose, let's say for medicinal reasons, but I then forgot why I stored that seed initially. V'hashta kamapik le'stama. So now when I'm carrying the seed out, I'm doing it without any specific intention, because I forgot why I initially stored the seed. So mahu d'seima, I might have said batule batla machashavto. I might have thought that my initial kavana, my initial thought process is out the window because I don't remember why I even stored the seed in the first place. Kamash malon kol ha'osel das rishona hu osa. Comes the Gemara and says that it's not true, that whenever a person does something, it's al das, it's on the condition, it's hearkening back to their original kavana. So whatever that original kavana was is going to still make them chayev, even though they don't even remember why they stored the seed in the first place. Okay, and then the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Michayav hoya Rabbi Meir af b'motzi chita achas lezria. Rabbi Meir used to say that even if a person carries out a single grain of wheat for planting, he's chayev on Shabbos for that. So the Gemara says, Pshita kol shu tana. That's obvious. That's what our Mishnah says. Our Mishnah says that once you stored something and you granted chashivas, that carrying any amount by definition is going to make you chayev. So what exactly is the chiddush of Rabbi Meir saying that carrying even a single grain of wheat is going to make you chayev? Of course it's going to make you chayev. That's what the Mishnah just said. So the Gemara says, no. Ma'u disema kol shehu la'afuke mi grogeres uliola ma de'ika kezayis kamash mon. Because one might have argued that when the Mishnah uses the expression kol shehu, it's not literal. And maybe the Mishnah never meant to say that I literally carry a tiny seed, a tiny grain of wheat, and I'm chayev. Maybe it just meant it's not so big. In other words, it's not the shear of a grogeres, of a fig that we're used to seeing in carrying on Hilchos Shabbos, but rather it's the smaller shear of a kezayis. And Gemara says, no, it's not true. It's literally a kol shehu. Literally, any amount that you carry out on Shabbos is going to make you chayev. So Then the Gemara asks, Maskeflo Rav Yitzchak Bereda Rav Yehuda Elameata Chishev Lahoti Kol Veso Hachi Nami Delomi Chayava Demapik Lchule. Let's say, for example, a guy says, "You know what? I want to clear out every single item from my house on Shabbos, every single one." So the Gemara says, "What? You're going to tell me the guy is not chayav until he literally carries out every last item? Guy just spent, let's say, you know, last 8 hours. He cleared 3/4 of his house, but he's not chayav yet because he hasn't taken every item out. That's crazy. What do you mean? He just spent 8 hours clearing out almost his entire house. Why would he not be chayav until he actually clears everything out?" The Gemara says, "No, that's not a good proof. Hustam, but l'daita waits l'kol adam. The reason why a person is chayav even before they carry their whole house out is because that guy is not acting normally, right? Normal people don't clear out their entire house. So even though this one crazy guy decides I want to clear my whole house out, it doesn't even register in halacha." We're going to get back to this concept a lot more in the coming dafim, and then also a little bit later on in the Masechta, this idea of but l'daito eitzel kol adam, the idea that if a person is doing something that's so abnormal, that's so out there, that's so crazy, it doesn't even register in terms of halacha. So if a guy is doing something that's so abnormal, it doesn't, you know, it almost doesn't faze us. So even though the guy says, "Yeah, I'm going to plan to carry the whole house out," the second he carries out the proper share of a normal person, he's automatically going to be chayav for that.